was a rough weekend for fans of Valentina, as she was sent home twice. First on RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars, and then when her character Angel went home to Jesus in the live version of Rent, the musical.
Despite having little experience in musical theater, Valentina was a good fit as Angel Dumont Chouinard.
Angel Dumont Chouinard.
Can I just say Angel?
No, it's okay. Fun.
Okay.
Angel Dumont Chouinard.
Valentina was a good fit as Angel Dumont Chouinard, the tragically beautiful character that embodied the emotional high point of the Tony and Pulitzer Prize winning musical.
Today, Sylvia Nix, from the debut season of Camp Wanakiki, joins us to talk about being Milwaukee's blue-collar cartoon housewife. Her web series with fellow drag queen James Mansfield on professional wrestling and the she-larious bumps on the road for what was supposed to be Rent Live.
Plus, what do you do when a drag queen doesn't smile when you give her a dollar?
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
One, two, three.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12.
Have you thought about doing an album?
Yeah, I want to.
You should.
I'm a great musician.
You sing pretty well, actually.
I'm a great singer.
No,
I can do all this stuff. I sing live when I'm in drag and for the stuff.
Yeah, I'm not even being shady. I think your voice is good.
Yeah. 5,020. What? How many minutes is there in a year in the life?
5,025.
Oh, I can't remember that number. Listen, you guys hired me because I'm Valentina, not because I know how to memorize lines or sing, okay?
Or dance.
Warning, everyone. Valentina is about to sing.
That was really funny when we were watching the show, and it's like we were having a weather warning here in Chicago, and it seemed like every time Valentina was about to come on stage, we're like,
Valentina is about to sing. Take cover.
She really did it, though. She really did it.
I gotta hand it to her. It was better than I thought she would. She was better than I thought she would be.
Mark, why do you say when people struggle in theater that you really did it?
Congratulations. You really did it.
Well, I heard that a lot when I was a kid.
It's, you want to be nice about these things, right?
Yeah.
Because we all know she got hired because she's got a million Instagram followers.
That's right.
You know?
And
they said they didn't even like audition her singing voice for this. They probably just thought, well,
they
got to
capitalize on the popularity of drag right now. And yeah. So what better role for.
But I wonder, though, it was like, is that the most popular person they could have gotten to fulfill that? I don't know.
Listen, Wilson Cruz was busy in the microverse or the mycelium
network. Well, he's also a little too old for that role now.
Then stop Anthony Rapp for showing up in the last 5 minutes. Anyways, folks, our guest today is Camp Wanakiki's Sylvia Nix.
Hail Satan.
How you doing, love?
Milwaukee queen.
Yes, that's where I'm from. I'm great. How are you guys?
I'm doing great. People describe you as the blue-collar cartoon housewife.
People talk about me, apparently.
Because you, they can visualize you as the MILF of drag.
I wouldn't call myself a MILF, but I'm definitely, I look older than I am.
How about a BILF, like a bimbo?
Yeah.
Like to fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm like Peg Bundy, but more wretched.
I noticed that you, like Sharon Needles, likes Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Well, look, it's you got to represent your hometown. And like anytime I travel, I figure why not travel with an empty beer can?
Do they still make Pabst in Milwaukee?
Yeah. Okay. They moved to Russia for a minute and then they
did. They really?
Yeah, they did. No, they like not a joke. They actually did move to Russia. And then there was such a big uproar that they had to move Pabst back to Milwaukee. Because it's just the staple of the city, the culture. Yeah. Mm. I wish they would move Donald Trump back to Russia.
They also put Miller up there too, don't they?
They used to. They're in Colorado now because they had the
better water
corporate buyout or whatever. They had like the Miller Coors. Yeah. And now they're actually changing the name of Miller Park to AmFam Park. And I just feel like
what
there's
the
a major American Family Insurance. There's just a major erasure of beer drinking in Milwaukee. And I'm actually really mad about it.
Well, because Milwaukee's a beer drinking town.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's what we're known for.
Schlesel Schlamazel, Haas and Pfeff Incorporated.
What was that?
Laverne and Shirley.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Jewish prayer. Did you know that?
No, it's not.
Yes. Google it.
She said it was something they would said at summer camp.
It's something like, you know,
so
like,
I don't
want to
talk about summer camp.
Yeah, it's
Jewish
no.
It's so not. Anyways, Sylvia Nix and James Mansfield are both share something in common, which is that they're the first drag queens eliminated from their seasons on their reality TV show competitions.
See, you're going to make me cry.
Well, and I think that's kind of, you know, some of the most interesting people, unfortunately, get sent home first in these reality TV show competitions. And certainly, like, we feel like James Mansfield and with you were sent home too soon.
Yeah, I mean...
And so you guys have gotten together and you've done a really amazing web series about drag queens and wrestling.
Yeah. Well, the thing with James and I is... James and I have actually been friends for a while, like way before either one of us were either on Drag Race or Camp Wanakiki, respectively.
So did James Mansfield give you advice on how to stay long? I would not have taken that advice.
Oh, don't be mean.
Well, it's true. She got eliminated first.
You stayed on for like two episodes, right? It was, you know.
I stayed. Yeah, I wasn't in the bottom two the first episode.
But James Mansfield also stayed for two episodes. James Mansfield was not eliminated the first episode, just like you.
True.
They've mirrored each other.
Yeah. I definitely think James... got the short end of the stick on her season. Like
she got to meet Lady Gaga.
No, and that's awesome. But she definitely deserved to stay longer. And I think she had a lot to offer that we didn't get to see. I think I don't know, like me and James, like the similarities don't just end with us being the first eliminated of our series.
But for the public, they sort of like see you as soul sisters. And James Mansfield did this really beautiful testimonial video for you.
Which was really sweet. As I said, like her and I have been friends like way before like Drag Race, way before Camp Wanakiki were even, I wouldn't say like, oh gosh, you can edit this right because I'm like tripping over my words. We were friends before Camp Wanakiki was even a thought and before James was on Drag Race.
Well, how did you guys come together? Were you doing drag shows or what?
Well, actually, like what ended up happening was they were doing a screening of a Divine documentary at a dive bar in Milwaukee. And James was there and I was there with a friend of mine, Divine Trash, who is a Milwaukee drag queen and impersonator of Divine. And I was there to support her and James was there and I had been following James for a little bit and I was still just like a budding drag queen and we kind of met and then from that point on we were kind of running in the same circle and then we discovered that we both have a lot of similar interests, like mainly professional wrestling, which you don't meet a lot of gay men who like wrestling. And so
I love wrestling too.
Yeah.
No, I mean, in the 80s with Cyndi Lauper and Captain Lou Albano, Roddy Piper.
Captain Lou Albano sounds like a great drag name. No,
there's a lot of similarities in wrestling. And certainly like tomorrow, iCandy Elliott is going to be coming back on the show. Who's it's kind of like wrestling.
They're the same thing.
It's a grassroots art form.
They're two sides of the same coin. Like, I would say that professional wrestling was my introduction to drag because when I was a kid, I was idolizing people like Ric Flair with his big feathered blonde hair and these gorgeous robes. And there really isn't much difference between the two art forms.
Well, lip syncing is a little bit different, right?
Yeah. Drag is a little more physical than professional wrestling, I would say.
I don't know. I've seen some queens fight over dollars on social media, and there's blood and hair flying.
Yeah, no, I've seen that too. I just think wrestling is more about the pageantry, and it's a little more fake than drag is sometimes.
And so you guys have a love of wrestling, and together you guys launched a YouTube series.
It's Queens of the Ring.
Queens of the Ring, where you discuss, like, hot topics in wrestling today?
Like, we've been doing this thing where we've been listing,
listicles
of like different topics. Like this most recent episode that just came out was our top five picks for like hottest men in wrestling.
Who are the top five?
I can't even think. There are a lot of hot guys.
Well, who's the hottest one? Like the one that gives
when
you
when I say a hot one,
who gives you a lady boner?
Finn Balor.
Finn Balor.
I Google that one.
Seth Rollins.
Finn Balor.
But not Cena.
Before he had his, he has this stupid dad haircut now. It's the bad comb over. But before then, like I would say, up until about 2014, and John Cena was.
Yeah, people are saying that John Cena kind of looks like Ernest now.
Oh, Ernest scared stupid. Yeah. He does kind of look like Ernest.
Sad.
Yeah,
Finn Balor.
Yeah,
he's pretty cute.
He
Come
is.
See me sometime.
Oh, I wouldn't mind getting a chokehold on my dick.
Yeah. Give me the full Nelson.
Ooh.
The double full Nelson.
I'll take a half. You get all the Nelsons that are left over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll take what I can get.
Finding hot wrestlers to have sex with, you can have them.
There are so many. Okay.
Well, tomorrow.
I'm used to picking up people's scraps.
I can be Elliot. Like, he's a really sweet guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's gorgeous. And he's a rising star in that sort of like. You know,
it's like an indie darling.
It's kind of like wrestling mirrors drag in the way that drag queens who get on Drag Race become sort of, financially somewhat more comfortable than drag queens who are not on the show. And wrestlers who are sort of doing it for the passion or love of the sport. / performance.
It's right, and it's more
struggle.
About the love.
It's a struggle.
Yeah. And I feel like drag and professional wrestling kind of mirror each other that way as well, because I feel like there's so much more passion when you are struggling in the art form. You're giving it your all every single night in hopes that somebody will notice. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, as soon as you hit the big leagues, and I'm not, you know, saying that they don't give it their all, but I feel like they. You know what? I'm just going to stop talking about that right now.
What? Well, I'm sorry. Is there something that like you don't feel comfortable talking about wrestling? Or?
No. Like, I mean, when you're doing it day in and day out for money.
Sure.
It, like.
It's a struggle.
It is.
It kills the joy, you mean? Or it makes people cynical about it?
No.
Use your words, Shelby.
I just don't want to say anything that would be dangerous, you know?
What's dangerous? What do you mean, what would be dangerous?
I'm not sure, like, what do you
think? I don't know where you're going.
I just feel like as soon as, like, you, like, are starting to make a ton of money doing it, the passion for it is lost a lot of times.
That's a truth for every single art form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even every job. You know, sometimes, like, people have passions.
Yeah.
We always hear this advice, like, make something that you're passionate about your job, but sometimes it's a tricky situation because
it can rob you of the
passion when you need to live on the money generated from that task.
If that's like your bread and butter and that's what makes you money, I feel like you lose a lot of passion for it. And I think everybody kind of experiences
that.
But
Sylvia, what I'm more interested in was why you feel saying that is so controversial that you're worried about your safety.
I just don't want anybody
for you.
I just don't want anybody thinking that I'm saying that they are like not 100% great. Right.
Okay.
I'm not saying that anybody's a
sellout.
We
all know that Hulk Hogan's a sellout.
Well, Hulk Hogan is. Hulk Hogan was a garbage wrestler and he's a garbage human, and I'll say that all day long.
So you feel comfortable saying that about Hulk Hogan, but you, I guess in talking about contemporary professional televised wrestling, it's a controversial thing to say.
I think just in any art form, like I feel
people
like people
are a little jaded.
No, I just like for me, I feel like it's not fair for me who hasn't gone on big tours or like done any of it's not fair to say that people lose their passion without having done it, but you can definitely like.
It's one of those things that was like, man, it's kind of a hipster kind of statement. It was like, I liked him before he became like really big, before it was really cool, you know, that kind of thing.
But no, I mean, and that's the dream for everybody. Like with professional wrestling, your dream is to one day be in WWE. Mm-hmm. For Drag Race, your dream is to be on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Well, and, not for everyone.
Well, no, I mean, but. Listen, I'm a
some people's
younger
drag
queen.
Some people's
right.
drag dream is to see RuPaul 6 feet under.
They like to pile drive RuPaul.
We know one queen who came up to us and was just like,
This is an established drag queen.
With Venom came up to us at the gym. She's like, I'm going to audition for RuPaul's Drag Race because I want to get on RuPaul's Drag Race so that I can get on. And in that first episode, I'm going to get eliminated. And you know why? And we go, why? Because I'm going to walk up to RuPaul. And I'm going to punch her right in the face. And we're like, why would she want to do that? He's like, because I hate her so much. And I'm just like, why, if you hate somebody that much, would you go through all the trouble to audition, get on the show, punch them in the face?
Well, you can't, like, have hatred without a little admiration for that. Well, not even, maybe not.
I mean, it's just kind of like, I'm like,
and there you go. What do you think about Trump? He's like,
No, like, fuck Trump.
This is what this person was like.
This person's like, you know,
whatever.
I'm ambivalent about politics, but man, RuPaul, public enemy number one. Because she sent Valentina home. Don't cry, girl. Don't you try it.
It was so sad to see Valentina die twice in one weekend.
Too soon.
I'm so... It's like, Latrice, are you happy now? Did you set her home? Her blood is in your hands.
It was yet then again, who was...
So let's...
Wrestling, yeah.
Well,
yeah. Passion.
Do you want to talk about wrestling? I just don't worry we're not going to talk about Rent the Musical with Valentina, which is so juicy.
I mean, we can talk about Rent and wrestling.
Okay, Rent.
Is there a crossover? Rent-sling.
But so finish the point you were trying to make about wrestling. It's about sort of like, it's hard to find genuine... when performers or athletes.
No, I mean, I wasn't trying to say that
by streaming of it on television.
Well, you're saying it's the eye of the tiger from like Rocky, you know, the thrill of the fight, rising up to the challenge of your rivals. Right. And if you lose that eye of the tiger because you're just concentrated on the money, because, you know, when you do wrestling, you really do get hurt.
You really do.
You know, it's painful. No, even though a lot of the stuff is rehearsed, you're still going to get hurt. And a lot of people, you know, they'd rather just cash the checks and not get hurt.
So even with a rehearsal, I mean, I wouldn't even say that a lot of get into an industry like that where you're putting your body on the line if you don't have the passion for it, especially like WWE. These guys are traveling like 365 days a year. This is their lifeblood. This is what they live for. And like when people are putting their body, I lost my train of thought again. When people are like putting
just
their
take a deep breath, Shelby.
Hail Satan.
Drink your juice.
Do you have juice? Yeah, you don't do that without...
Just imagine Valentina singing to you.
I can't do that.
Measure your life and love.
No, and there's 100% a passion in professional wrestling and drag, and a lot of people are putting their livelihood and their lifeblood in performing and traveling and... giving their all 110% of the time, and you don't do that unless you have a love for what you're doing. And there's so many mirrors between the two art forms. Like, a lot of professional wrestlers have like unspeakable charisma, which is something that drag queens need. If you don't have it, you are boring to the mainstream audiences. And like, going back to like my biggest drag inspiration being Ric Flair. You see him and he's screaming into a microphone with about $600 like alligator shoes. You see that in people like Bianca Del Rio or Trixie Mattel. Like, maybe not, it's maybe not like a cut and dry comparison, but you need to have that connection with your audiences and that kind of insane passion.
Well, you came of around a time that Trixie Mattel came, and even you yourself got a start in the same Rocky Horror Show production that Trixie got started in.
Yeah.
What do you think like cultivates that ability to connect with an audience in a performer?
I think it's just genuinely a passion or a need to express yourself in ways that are different and ways that will set you apart from other people. You know, and speaking of Rocky Horror, that does it like a really good job of the Rocky Horror community is.
Are you trying to say that like that experience trains people to sort of like go from sort of dreamers to don't dream it, but to be it?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Dr. Frankenfurter said it best when he was singing those lines. Mm-hmm. Like, it's about finding yourself and truly cultivating yourself into being somebody who's unapologetic and being original and not caring about what people think. And if you have that in you to express that, then you should do it and absolutely work towards it and embrace what makes you unique and different.
But at the same time, you know, Dr. Frankenfurter gets murdered by his peers.
Oh, yeah.
By his own people from the planet Transylvania. They think she gets too big for her britches.
Well, the entertainment industry is full of awful people.
But think about this. Like, the fact that in the 1970s, Richard O'Brien was wise enough to create a film or a musical that was turned into a film that narrated this eclectic space aliens that landed on planet Earth and where people, the unconventional conventionalists, were human beings who fell in love with these aliens. And Dr. Frankenfurter became so popular that he had to be literally killed because it was going too far.
I've never heard a movie so stupid be analyzed so well.
But you're absolutely right. And so, you know, we see this time and time again. And I think, like, it's sort of an analogy, you know, with people's, like, venomous hatred of an LGBT superstar like RuPaul.
Right.
It stems from the fact that there's this idea that LGBT culture in its inherent nature is decadent.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And when it becomes too celebrated, too mainstream, it has to be struck down. Mm. Well, the sword of Damocles.
Oh, yeah. That is kind of like that, right?
Yeah. You know, and
this must be punished for having Rocky too much fun.
Right. It's one of my favorite movies, but I've never really thought about it in those terms. And so my mind is like just kind of exploding right now.
You have to think about these things deeply.
Have you ever seen
the sequel Shock Treatment?
Yes. It's not as good.
But no, it's awful.
Peaches Christ has a lot interesting things to say about it. She says that actually, and this is on our website, Feast of Fun. Mm-hmm. You can listen to the archives of Peaches talking about it.
I love Peaches.
That it was a sort of foretelling or forecasting the popularity of reality TVs.
Yeah.
And you know, sort of treating people like as if they were in an insane asylum. But, you know, through television is very similar to what a lot of people go through with reality television show today. Now, a reality TV superstar, Valentina, mm-hmm. or as her friends know her as Villantina, for being a very difficult or very demanding drag queen at bar events. She notoriously was known for demanding red roses, a bottle of champagne, and a bag of red M&Ms in her dressing room.
If I was as successful as Valentina, I probably would have similar demands, except for it would be beer and not champagne.
Hot man.
Alaska said, what's wrong with red M&Ms and champagne? I like red M&Ms and champagne.
Replace the M&Ms with like chocolate cake, or maybe like Hostess Ho-Hos. Hostess makes Ho-Hos, right?
Well, sure.
Yeah.
So the reason artists do weird things in their writers and requests.
Well, Van Halen asked for no green M&Ms because they want, or I can't remember what color, but they
made them horny.
It didn't make them too horny.
To know that every single one of their demands is being mm-hmm. met. Otherwise, what could go wrong when they were.
Exactly.
Playing.
Lady Bunny requests that the stage should be able to hold at least 300 pounds.
Right.
Well, her wigs are like 150 pounds alone.
Yeah.
So anyways, Valentina got on RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars and, you know, started rustling some feathers, you know, brushing the fur the wrong way on mm-hmm. some of the queens. Yes, the animal metaphors are intentional. And so Valentina was, spoiler alert, sent home this week by Latrice Royale, who made a comeback, right?
Yeah.
And once again,
I can't lie to you, I didn't watch this week's episode.
And so she was on cast as Angel, a very important character in a very important Pulitzer and Tony Award winning musical, Rent, when Fox decided to.
How many Tonys did it win?
It won 4.
Well, that's the second most amount of Tonys that I've seen at one time in my rectum.
I think the way you made that joke was in my bedroom.
Whatever.
That's a more Tony. That's Same half thing. As many Tonys as I have in my. That's a very James Mansfield thing to say.
So her and I have very similar.
Can you do a James Mansfield imitation?
Hi, kittens. My name is James Mansfield.
That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I so see Valentina, her like at least 3 times a week.
Valentina was cast, and it was a very important, I think it's very important for these dreamers that are drag queens who get on RuPaul's Drag Race to break out of the mold of the typical, you know, you release an album, you perform at bars, you hope that you're going to be covering your costs, mm-hmm. but ultimately, if you really want a long career, you have to cultivate your own audience outside of these shows that you go.
Right.
And outside of just like that bar circuit or that theater circuit. And so it's important to branch out and do other things, like Foster is saying. So why wouldn't she go out after a role like this or be contacted for?
Right.
So when interviewed for mm-hmm. the fact that you're sort of a breakout queen from All Stars 4, Valentina said, "They didn't even ask me if I knew how to sing or dance or anything. I can even barely remember lines." So everybody's like, "Ooh, girl, this is gonna be a train wreck."
She did flub a line.
She did pretty freaking well with no Broadway experience, I have to say. I really love that.
You know, Angel is an imperfect character, and I think casting Valentina was a really smart decision.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing with Rent, too. All three of us were having this discussion earlier. Yeah. Every single character in Rent is an imperfect person. And I don't think that in order to truly embody what they were trying to say, you don't want perfect actors or perfect actresses in that. You just want people who have that kind of energy and passion for it and mm-hmm. understand the struggles of what they're going mm-hmm. through.
But on the other hand, you know, there's also a suspension of disbelief. Nobody expects, like, when you're watching, let's say, Little Shop of Horrors, to see that homeless person walking out on the street all of a sudden belt out and singing, you know, Downtown. Wonderful thing. You're not going to expect, you know, a homeless person on the street to be able to sing like this. And so to say that, like, you wouldn't expect that character to be able to sing like that is not... You know, that's not the Broadway aesthetic. So
true.
I think in some ways it was, you know, kudos to her for trying it and for going out there.
At the end of the day, she's an entertainer.
Maybe with a little more training that she would maybe have done a little bit better. And so in some ways, I'm kind of surprised that they let her go out like that and not have her do more of a preparation for that role.
Well, how many months ahead of time did they cast? I'm not going to lie to you. I don't really pay attention.
I'm not sure. They announced it about a year ago that they were going to do this, so I don't know when they were casting. But it's also, too, you know, as an artist, it's like, if you're going to be on television, I don't know what her workout is like or what she's doing, her vocalizations. But, you know, when you're going to be on something like this, it's like, you just really have to give it your all. And maybe she did give it her all, you know? Or maybe in her fantasy, because she likes to talk about her fantasy, maybe she really thought she was some fantastic singer. I don't know.
I don't think Valentina was the worst singer. I think Kiella Settle, who was sort of singing what usually was done, I guess that was handed over to Wicked star...
Idina Menzel.
And Idina Menzel later at the end of the show, that second female voice in Seasons of Love, I didn't think she actually did a very good job in singing that live. And I think Valentina held her own quite well next to these established Broadway actors who've had a lifetime of training and experience. And maybe that just, you know, that singing live is just a difficult thing to do.
It is. And I mean, I guess I was just so focused on like Valentina's performance just because.
You're a racer chaser. The only reason why you watch Rent Live is to watch Valentina.
Let me give you guys some other perspective.
Racer, chaser.
Part of our interest in drag and people's public interest in drag is because we're interested in failure and rawness as a form of authenticity. Because we live in a world that's everything's autotune and polish. And as human beings, we are hungry for connecting with another human being, expressing themselves creatively.
Right.
And so when we hear Valentina struggle and fail or succeed on television, it endears us to her.
A lot of people who want to see, and Valentina's a figure who splits people 50-50. There are certainly a ton of people who want to watch her fail, especially.
Sure.
I think, you know, as I said before, I think she held her own pretty well, and
she did okay.
She really did. I thought it was going to be.
I'm a super huge fan of her drag. Gorgeous. Of her performance and her looks and her personality and everything like that. You know, I think that she's absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I was really disappointed to see her go home on All Stars 4. I thought she was going to be top
top three.
I think a lot of people did. Yeah. I think a lot of people thought that she was going to go all the way with it. And
well, that's why she had to be eliminated.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you want that crown, girl, you got to get rid of the competition.
I wouldn't be shocked if we saw Valentina on another All-Stars down the line.
Oh, that's,
and
you know,
think about it. She's only 22.
Oh, Jesus.
It's like, she's so young. And, you know, that just kind of goes to show, like, this girl is 22 years old and she, from the onset, has been working her ass off and doing things that, you know, people who have been in the drag industry for 20 years can't say that they've been able to do.
For sure.
So when we first started watching Rent Live, the whole internet exploded in a what the fuck moment when there was a giant disclaimer says, previously recorded.
Yeah, what happened? And so, somebody broke their foot or something?
Right before the first commercial break, the entire cast says, thanks for watching Rent Live. Unfortunately, we're not able to do it live tonight because actor Brennan Hunt busted his leg.
Oof.
And so he's in the hospital or something like that. And so they, what we saw for the first until the very end, Season of Love finale, was the pre-recording, the trial run, in case some calamity happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it did happen. Which is interesting, you know, at the end when the original cast came out, and then so we have got the original cast, this cast there, Brandon comes out, he's out, but he's just kind of like sitting on a table. But for whatever reason, his back is mostly turned to the camera. Like, he's kind of just like, oh my, I'm kind of probably embarrassed because he, you know.
I missed that.
Disappointed a lot of people, yeah. You know, yeah. He's injured, and I don't know if anybody didn't tell him to face the camera, they didn't get a camera on him, or if maybe he was just kind of upset because, you know, he kind of, you know, ruined it for everyone, didn't he?
I might have been in the bathroom for that, or I might have missed it. I missed like the first 20 minutes, but that's
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. You know, I really appreciate the boxing ring setup, theatrical setup of the show.
Set was amazing. And that's something that I don't think the movie did justice on was the set pieces in Rent. And that's really like, I don't want to say that I enjoyed this live version better than the film, but I think they captured what Rent was supposed to be a little better than the film did. You can't speak any more highly of what they had created. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was nice to see Valentina not just kiss, same sex kiss, or say, you know, queer kiss, Brandon Victor Dixon, in the live presentation, but also she was pulling on his lips. And there was a lot of, Vanessa Hudgens and, Kiri Clemens? They were like, she actually comments like, quit biting on my lip, girl. There was a lot of intense same-sex kissing. I really appreciated that. For Fox, for showing that, that was really great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I liked it. Now, I'm a little confused. Was those meetings where all the HIV-positive people were sort of supporting each other, was that an ACT-UP meeting? Or was that like a HIV
HIV support group.
Okay,
otherwise, if it was ACT-UP, they would have been like, we're an ACT-UP meeting. Let's get out there and terrorize them.
Fight back, fight AIDS!
Yeah. I'm a little younger than you guys. I'm sorry, everybody at home. I'm not 100% sure what an ACT-UP meeting is.
What's Stonewall?
People
don't know what Stonewall is.
So, a lot of, it's 50th anniversary of Stonewall, by the way.
It's a
coming
50,
up in June.
So at the height of the AIDS crisis, a lot of people got together and decided to put a lot of pressure on the government and the healthcare industry in the United States and the Western world to do more for HIV and AIDS than they were doing at the time. And so a lot of coalitions to unleash power, get it?
Uh-huh.
ACT UP. It's an acronym.
Okay.
It was, you know, were put together to demand that we have
pay more attention and
not just universal healthcare, but actually like a revolution in how we develop and administer medicines and treatments for diseases. And we really owe so much to these people who sacrifice their lives and their estates and their careers to lock themselves up and chain themselves to the government offices, to the National Centers of Disease Control, to pharmaceutical corporate offices, just to get them to wake up from their complacency and hostility to the idea that this disease that was targeting people of color and LGBT people, you know, queer people, sex workers, drug addicts, drug users, was a cost that was able to happen, that these people were somehow expendable. Mm-hmm. And so these individuals said, you know what, this is a horrible humanitarian crisis. This is a an atrocity, and we need to change this. And as a result, we have, you know, PrEP today, which was being advertised on the air, is a consequence of these individuals' demands on the world to bring about a change. And so, you know, in terms of like, you know, the crises like, you know, Ebola and the bird flu, a lot of these things, and the fact that we've been able to sort of respond faster to these kind of healthcare scares or crises that could have exploded and become much worse is due to the efforts of ACT UP and, and people like that. So, you know, if you're alive and breathing today, honey, it is thank ACT UP and thank like Larry Kramer and thank these random people you never know.
And they really pissed off a lot of people with their protests, and people are like, oh, we shouldn't be acting like this. We shouldn't be doing this. We shouldn't interrupt a church. So when you're looking at this, like in a historical perspective, these people really just rocked the establishment, and they got super afraid. They were, you know, charging into churches and saying like, we like people are dying, and the government was like trying to shut them down. They just fought back and they changed so much. And at the time, but people were just absolutely freaked out by them, but they're heroes now.
No, and that's great. And honestly, like, more props to them, because like, what
And you've seen that silence equals death kind of thing.
Yes,
that was one of the things, like, you know, it was very involved with the ACT UP movement,
right?
I don't want anybody who doesn't know about LGBT history to feel bad that they don't know it.
No,
it's not taught in our high schools. So, it's not taught in college. It's even, you know, some people were really concerned about whitewashing that that history.
Well, I remember when I was in high school, Rent was kind of put on the table as a musical that we had the option to potentially do. And I went to a more liberal high school, but they still kind of had to shut it down because the themes are so mature. But at the same time, they're so important. And, you know, I hope one day down the line, even if the themes are still considered too radical, we are still having book reports on movies or books like A Clockwork Orange. I think it would be important to teach kids in high school a little more about gay history.
And they do have like a high school version of Rent, and that's what people were really afraid was going to be on there. And I'm not sure how they sanitize it. Do they even mention that it's AIDS that people are dying or sick of?
But they should.
Or they they get rid of the same sex kisses. I'm not sure exactly how that works.
Well, I do know that, like, you know, some of those, there was a joke that, like, you know, their bedroom is hotter than the Coke spoon of something.
I mean, that there's a lot of graphic heroin injection
scenes in Rent that probably weren't in this show. You know, and Rent at the time period was also seen by people in ACT UP and countercultural drag queens like myself as square.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was it was seen as co-opting or commodifying or trivializing the brutality of the AIDS crisis. And it took a long time for our community to come together and really celebrate a song like Seasons of Love. And I remember these very like conservative groups, like, you know, the gay Republicans or the even the gay choirs tended to gravitate more to a conservative group. Singing Seasons of Love, as the young people today would say, cringeworthy.
And that's so interesting that you would bring that up, because I remember the movie came out when I was about 12 or 13, and that was one of my first introductions to a queer art form. And today I think we put Rent as on a pedestal as this big important thing, which I think it absolutely deserves to be in that position. But I also, it was kind of fascinating, you guys shared an article with me about how there was an author that had inspired a lot of what was going on at the time. And I really think that it would be important, back to the high school thing, to talk about in our curriculums, to talk about LGBT history, because, you know, I'm kind of embarrassed to not know what an ACT UP meeting is, but that just goes to show that I don't think people,
well, people don't focus on it. You know, Rent, they say, is, you know, it's based on La Boheme, the opera where people are dying of consumption.
Puccini.
And Out Magazine just did a report. And there's a woman out there, an author, Shulman, says that that the person that wrote Rent, Jonathan Larson, lifted a lot of the elements from her book, People in Trouble, like plot points, subpoints, even like details, even characters.
Right.
This is a writer, Sarah Shulman.
Sarah Shulman says, that he incorporated that a lot into his work.
You know, as somebody who gets a lot of my ideas and work lifted by other people, I forgive Larson for doing that.
It's about taking inspiration.
So what are you gonna do?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I was like, what are you gonna? Is like, and then
nothing is original anymore.
Well, I think it's important to credit where credit is due.
Yes,
and there's nothing wrong with, you know, putting a footnote. Say, you know,
this is where I got this from. This is, yeah.
The problem is when there's a lot of money being made, you know. If you can't love yourself, how the hell are you gonna love somebody else? You know, if somebody else, like, I have a friend of mine who told me that there are people who RuPaul used to be friends with who call her on the phone at the beginning of the, you know, hysteria of RuPaul's Drag Race and be like, you stole that from me, you bitch. You owe me. And RuPaul just hang up the phone and like, I'm not talking to you anymore.
Is that true?
Well, this is a story I don't feel too comfortable talking about because it does involve quite a few people we know personally.
I think I've heard the story about a couple of different people.
But, it, you know, it's a situation that is it's tricky when you're doing things with culture and you're remixing.
Right.
And sometimes, what do they call it? Kryptonesia. You read something and then it kind of gets in your mind and you don't really realize where it comes from.
Well, right. Susan Sontag is the person who's credited with saying, you're born naked and the rest is drag. And certainly RuPaul is heavily influenced by a lot of these feminist writers, whether she is aware of it or not. You know, it's certainly like writers like Andrea Dworkin and Susan Sontag influenced RuPaul's philosophies. You know, Louise Hay, a lot of these ideas that RuPaul loves to talk about on her show is, it really comes from a lot of these 1980s feminist writers or self-help authors. So it's okay to me, in a sense, like, if you find an idea that you really love,
the seeds,
it's like
are
a
sown.
Coin on the floor. But if you can give credit to somebody, if someone tells you that you, this is where it comes from, it's okay to also, you know, say, if you want to read more, go visit your local library.
Talk about your inspirations in an interview.
Like, what are you like thinking that. About so far with All Stars 4? Because it's about to wrap up and we're about to see a crown royale happen. I did predict Latrice Royale's going to take it. I'm still holding on to that prediction.
Do you think it's going
to
be her or is it going to be Manila?
I think Latrice is going to take it. Unless Latrice's ego gets in her way, and RuPaul loves to teach people, don't let your ego take control.
I'm 100% okay with either Manila or Latrice. I think they're both incredibly talented, and I think that the RuPaul's Drag Race audience has forgotten about them over time. Well, not necessarily forgotten about, but they're not sung as highly as people like Alaska or Bianca, and they absolutely deserve to be on that pedestal. When it boils down to it, I hope we see Manila. I think that in my opinion, she's a little more entertaining. And Latrice, to say that she's more entertaining than Latrice is amazing 100% of the time. I just hope that Manila can compete with her. And I think Manila just has that little bit of an edge. And she's a little more interesting. Her runways are a little bit like more eye-catching. And her personality is a little more addicting, in my opinion. And plus, Manila does charities for animals, and I just have a soft spot.
Oh, that's adorable. Manila certainly is a lot of fun. She's got a lot of fun with her costume, her ideas. She's great at mugging for the camera. But Latrice has that, like that gravitas, you know? Like, she says one little thing, and it just resonates with you.
And
with
these nuts out of my face!
From Latrice, like, she's the type of bitch that as soon as she walks in the room, she steals your attention. Mm-hmm. She has that natural charisma that we were talking about before.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I would be 100% okay with either one of them.
So who will be the top three then? Is it Trinity?
Hold on a second. It's time for my AZT medication.
Oh my god.
Sorry, I had to.
Oh my god.
Like that joking. the top three is probably, well, I always said it was going to be Valentina, but someone's saying that it's going to be Monet Exchange.
I love Monet this season,
Latrice
too.
Latrice Royale. Naomi Smalls and Manila Luzon. And I'm just kind of like,
there's four people in the finale?
Fake news, people. Latrice is going to take it. I'm still holding on to my prediction.
Well, I think also, too, is like, you know, when you have somebody like Naomi, she's just young. She can come back for another season or something like
absolutely.
That. But Manila was, you know, was on season two. Latrice is on, season four with Sharon Needles, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, you give it to an older queen so she can retire.
That's something, too. Like, I think you should be giving a throwback to older generations. generations of drag, and you know, saying that these seasons are only 5 years old, like, I think it would be great to see somebody like Latrice, like, take that torch and run with it.
Now, I want to tell you, if you're lip syncing for your life against Latrice and the song is "And I'm Telling You I'm Not Going From Dreamgirls," you better start packing.
You're
Because Latrice literally says that every single time she goes,
"What do you know?
I am not going. I am not going from the show. I'm telling you.
Push, strike, or kill. Yeah. Let's just settle on kill."
Yeah. So one thing we haven't talked about with you was your experience on Camp Wanakiki. Now, even though you were unceremoniously sent home in the second episode, you were there the entire time with all these other queens, and you sort of experienced that rare moment in a debut series that, you know, Camp Wanakiki could be the next.
I'm the pork chop.
Yeah. You're the pork chop of the series, you know?
Yeah.
What was your, you know, I do notice that there is a little bit of resentment from the drag queens from that experience. And I kept telling them, was like, this is not RuPaul's Drag Race. This is just a show that's like taking place in the middle of the woods. It's very humble.
Yeah.
You know, let me put it this way. Cooking with drag queens is more sophisticated than Camp Wanakiki. And we're broke podunk as it is. So Camp Wanakiki, you be happy that you got water, clean water, a roof over your head, and
all
lights.
For $2 a day. Oh, I cannot smoke. I cannot speak for anybody else.
Everybody else, but you're, but you were there, and you,
I was,
and you certainly have a vibe of what's going on.
No, and I do, and you know, I've spoken to a few of the other girls, and I think that we are all very honored to be a part of this series, especially in the first season. Like, we were the chosen ones, and
you didn't even have to audition for it.
I know. And like, that was, I was so, I remember getting a phone call.
You'd be great for the show to eliminate early.
Right. I mean, and I will speak for myself, and I cannot speak for anybody else. I am happy that I did it.
I thought you were wonderful.
Thank you.
You mean everybody else isn't happy they did it?
I'm not saying that. I mean,
well, we know. Listen. There's hostility.
Like, I can only speak for myself. I'm happy to do it. But, you know.
And you know what? Yeah. It's like you talk to these girls about Drag Race, and they're like, and I'm like, this is, you know, this is a once in a lifetime experience. If you're listening out there.
It was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and I think we're all very thankful for the exposure that we got from it. And I know for me, like, I was not anticipating ever doing a show like Drag Race or Dragula, and getting a phone call that asked me, like, hey, do you want to do this cool YouTube series? And not knowing anything about what we were getting ourselves into, it was fun. I enjoyed meeting everybody. We still are in correspondence to this day. And it certainly gave me a boost. And I just kind of took it and ran with it and learned what I could. And even though I was only on it for two episodes, like, what the hell can you say? Like, you really just, in my experience, you have to take everything and just be happy about it. Never regret anything.
Listen, you know what? We all have been in jobs where we did get promoted.
Mm-hmm.
And even, and sometimes, you know, when you apply for a promotion in your job, it, you're like, I can take it or leave it. But when they tell you you didn't get it, it can hurt still.
No,
and I was in the room when you were sent home, and I was just like, I was like devastated, because I was like, this is the first time that I had been physically in the presence of someone who's being sent home. It was just like, it was hard to manage those feelings.
In that moment for me, it was incredibly draining. It was incredibly emotional, because at that moment you're thinking, like, what did I do wrong? Like, where could I have improved, or what could I have done differently? What could I have done that would have set me apart from the rest of the pack? And ultimately, at the end of the day, it wasn't anybody's decision but theirs, and you have to respect it, because they were still the people who asked you to do the show. And looking back, just being on the show has given me such a confidence boost, not just in drag, but in my day-to-day life. Like, it made me think, like, why would I ever do something that didn't make me happy? That day forward, because it was so devastating. It was such an emotional drain to be sent home first in something that you didn't even know was going to take off, that, you know, I ended up reevaluating my life, and I quit a job that I hate because it didn't make me happy, and I'm working a job that I absolutely love. I am seeing, like, the drag that I thought, you know, my in my eyes, like, some mm-hmm. of my old drag was not up to par with my contemporaries, but I realized after doing that show, like, it doesn't matter. I can't compare myself to anybody else. And I just have to be happy with what I do, because I do have a following and people like me for being a personality queen. And I was talking to Pagan about this, and we were both in agreement.
Pagan Holiday or
Pagan Holiday. Yes.
Co-girl.
We were kind of just had a beer together, and we're sitting down and just talking about how, no matter what came of it, no matter what happened, it was just about living an experience that not a lot of drag queens get. Mm. And honestly, like, I wouldn't have done anything differently. I might have spent a little bit more money on my wardrobe. That's about it.
I just, you know, part of me is like, if your show's sending people home because they don't have expensive costumes, you know, that's what I was there basically the entire week. I'm like, you can't send someone home because they didn't have the money to build an expensive costume.
Yeah.
That's basically what I kept saying all the time, you know. And I probably, like, violating. I didn't sign any non-disclosure agreements.
Oh, so you can say anything you want.
I can say anything. Goddamn thing I
well,
want
you know,
to.
In some queens, yeah. they do get accused of buying their way into drag because they have, like, you know, family money and stuff. And so
I would do it. If
outfits,
I had the money,
you know?
I would buy my way into drag. I don't think there's any shame in that. As long as you're entertaining.
Tricks, I'll tell you the part of the reason that they sent you home early is because you were lovable.
Aww.
And you raised the stakes because you definitely were not the weakest in the group. And by sending somebody who was likable and appealing home first, it made people say, holy shit, we don't know what's going to happen next.
Yeah,
and that's why you watch.
They sent a nice one home?
They sent the love. It was like kicking a puppy, you know? It's like,
aww.
In some degree, you know, it was really gut-wrenching.
Well,
you know?
that means a lot to me, hearing that. I really appreciate that. Thank you. You're going to make me cry. But
well, you should cry about it.
Been there, done that.
Did
first
really
night
cry?
No, I did. As Bosto. Yeah. That first night, yeah, I was like, it was a pretty training experience. Those tears that you saw on the show were real. But you know,
because you had
live
a lot
and
of
and
hopes
and
aspirations and, about it, and part of it was like,
I haven't.
You
let,
didn't realize how much you wanted it until it
was taken
off,
right.
taken away. Yeah,
aww.
But I really haven't let it slow me down. You know, I look at pictures of myself in the last 6 months versus pictures of me like when I did the show. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I have really taken it as a growing opportunity.
Would you do the show again? They invited you back for season two.
I don't know if I would compete.
No?
You would have packed a hot lunch. That's what I told everybody. Is like, if you're getting on this show, bring some food, because it is camping. And, you know, I know I didn't go camping. Well, I went camping once as a kid, and I'll tell everybody this. Camping sucks.
Yeah.
For food? If you are used to, like, hot meals and stuff like that and comfort,
but
and
people
stuff,
have a different expectation of food.
Yeah.
You know, they don't expect a fancy, you know, a fancy gourmet meal. Out
to be honest,
whatever,
like,
whatever.
Compared
sure.
to the diet that I was on when I went to camp, I was at least getting vegetables. No, I mean, like,
what
it wasn't
diet?
A diet at all. Exactly. I was getting vegetables at camp, and that's not something that I eat
yeah,
normally.
Yeah, people in Milwaukee are not known for the healthiest diets, are they?
No. We're the land of beer and cheese.
Fried
you want me to read
curds.
The notes? I actually took a picture of my stage notes
oh.
from the show here, and I never talked about this before. And I said, Sylvia Nix, bare necessities.
Oh, yeah, because we... Because
you were also dressed like a bear, and I said, I like your taste in costumes.
Yeah, no, I remember that. That was one
like,
of the first. Well, I
save
love bears.
This queen, but you had already been eliminated by then. And I was like, boo. And you could see who I was like putting a I put in like a little skull and crossbones.
Well, we
over.
Can talk about that later.
And I put a little star next to who I thought, and I actually thought the JJ.
She did the beaver look.
I put her in the number one. Number two, Alexis Bevels.
But JJ's look was hilarious that episode.
It was a tie between Alexis and Muffy for number two spot.
Muffy had the dog park look.
Mm-hmm.
And then Alexis was the fox, right? Was that the week that she did the fox?
Yeah. And yeah. That was really extremely clever.
Oh, all of her runways were great.
And so, you know, I thought it was really great that a lot of these individuals with, you know, without knowing what was going to happen, put their heart and soul and a lot of effort into putting together these extraordinary costumes and performances,
right,
and ideas, and then subjected themselves to being in what basically is, you know, a very beautiful prison-like atmosphere.
Beautiful prison.
You know, it's nature, it's beautiful, but you're in barracks.
Yeah.
It's just a bulb in the ceiling, and everybody's... To me...
I still had a week off of work.
The triumph of these drag queens being able to get together in the middle of nowhere and put together these looks is really, like, it's not something that's spoken about, because... It's just something that, you know, if you ever gone to, like, Camp It, for example, or, you know, the Radical Fairies, and you see, like, the mm-hmm. drag that takes place in the middle of the woods, it's a hard thing just to put on foundation and concealer and not to have your powder get chunky because of the moisture.
No, I remember, too, like, we were filming very long days, and some of those days were raining, and some of those days were 95 degrees, and I'm not even exaggerating. It was warm. And
it was freezing, and then, you know, brutal murder heat.
It was the Midwest.
Yeah.
It's the only way you can describe it. And
people are looking
at me like, I went through probably like five cans of hairspray, because at that point you throw setting spray out the window. That's not going to work for you. I was using my Gatsby glue hairspray to set my face.
Mm.
And then when we came time to like change whatever look we had, I would just wipe my eyes off and repaint them. And keep the rest on. Like, I learned how to quick paint that week, and I'm going to tell you, it didn't smell pretty in those cabins, and your face didn't look as pretty as they could have been if you were in a cooler sound system.
Well, you know, I think your talking belt was probably the worst scent there.
Well,
know?
Listen, I was in the same cabin as Muffy Fish Basket and Vajayjay Snappin' Turtle, and we are three very, very gassy girls. So,
oh, really? Like, so you guys are all farting at night?
Oh, yeah. Me and Muffy had some competitions. Yeah.
Oh, really?
It was like... Yeah.
It was like, who smelt it, dealt it.
We felt like it felt like we were all in fifth grade again.
Sylvia, it's so good talking to you. I really appreciate you. I know that's not easy coming from Milwaukee to Chicago to tape the podcast. I know you did a great personal demands on you to get here, and I really appreciate you being here.
Yeah. I mean, why would I say no? I really enjoy listening to your podcast, so why not?
So sweet.
Yeah.
Thank you. It was wonderful to meet you.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't get to go to Camp Wanakiki, but I did get to meet you up in Milwaukee.
Yeah, you guys were at Dick's when Disasterina were there.
Disasterina!
Yeah. I think we met before that, too, because you were at the finale.
Yes, I was at the finale. Yeah. Oh, so you came for that? Yes, that's right.
Yeah, well, I had to be there.
Oh, my God. You know what is? That finale taping was 7 hours long, 6 hours, 7 hours long. So
it wasn't short.
It was shorter than Drag Race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those Drag Race, they tell all the people to wear diapers.
Right. But I met you first in Milwaukee, for sure.
Yeah.
No, actually, we met way, way before this, but it wasn't like an official like meeting, because you guys were doing... Cooking with Drag Queens, and we're filming for James.
Ah!
Yeah. But I wasn't in drag, and it was just like a 3-second meeting of, hey, what's going on? Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah.
Hang on.
Well, I always have a fun time coming up into Milwaukee.
There's a group of drag queens and drag fans on social media that are really mad about the way drag queens react when a fan comes up to them while they're performing and gives them a dollar. Now, in Europe, it's kind of unusual to tip drag queens dollars while they're performing.
Most of the rest of the world, it's kind of an American, maybe Canadian custom.
Well, tipping, like, in general, is just kind of an American thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're saying that there's some queens that they not taking a shining to because they're not smiling or making eye contact when They give him a dollar, and I wrote back to them. I said, "Bitch, look at me in the eye when I give you the money."
And, you know, I can understand what you're getting and where you're coming from, because when you give a drag queen a dollar, like Alaska says, you're sharing a moment with them, right? And so you can kind of understand that. But sometimes it's, you know, a dollar, giving a dollar to a drag queen during their performance can be kind of obtrusive. And that's why, you know, when we were in Texas, when Fausta performed, and there was a couple of different drag shows we went to down there, and they just had a bucket on the stage. So you wouldn't give the dollar to the drag queen directly. You'd put it into the bucket because, you know, everybody's focused on their performance, and we've all gone to drag shows where it's just a queen up there singing, grabbing a dollar after a dollar from another person, and you're just kind of like...
There's a nickname for that. Lettuce pickers.
Lettuce pickers?
Lettuce pickers. Yeah. No, and...
That's a good one.
No. To an extent, I understand both sides of the argument.
Sure.
For me, like, I like people, and I like interacting with people, and if somebody wants to give me money, in my own way, I like to thank them, so I'll, like... Maybe rub their finger if they give me a dollar, or wink at them, or blow them in a kiss or something. Just give them a moment, because they are taking time out of their day and money out of their wallets to give you the money. But I am not a very high energy performer, and I actually, when I perform, I can do that. And then there are performers who are super choreographed, and their moves are intense, and they're doing cartwheels and splits and everything, and it might be intrusive to give them a dollar. And I don't think anybody should take it personally if somebody doesn't give you that moment, because at the end of the day, like, you're going to the show to see them, and they are thankful whether or not in that very instance they show it or not. They're still doing it for you.
As the vixen said, put the money on the floor, on the floor, on the floor.
Put the money on the floor, put the money on the floor.
Now, let me just say, I'm a person who makes eye contact and smiles and shakes hands and kisses babies. And I absolutely adore meeting the public, and I love when they give me dollar bills.
Yeah.
And I'm like, girl, I'm touchy-feely. I'm going to grab you. I'm going to kiss you and stuff. However, in defense of people with RBF, resting bitch face, or resting bitch life. Okay, so for some people, feminism is about the right to people to be authentic, and we sometimes put so much demand on women to smile when they don't feel like smiling. Yeah. What's the matter, dearie? Why aren't you smiling?
You'd look better with a smile.
And it's very anti-feminist to tell people they need to smile when they don't feel like smiling.
Right.
At the same time, it's like, let's create a space so people who want to have that connection with the audience can. But if that performer, for any reason, isn't able to make eye contact when you give them the money, bitch, or smile when you're tipping them a dollar, it's okay. Put a bucket. In Austin, Texas, at the Poo Poo Platter show, the queens, they so brilliantly, you could take tips. But it was expected that everybody pool their tips together in a big bucket and then split it.
That's a huge thing. Burlesque. Like, that's a burlesque thing. Yeah. Like, they tip through the bucket and then split it. And I think that's great. I also think, like, drag is a different culture when it comes to how people interact with drag queens.
Is it boring to watch somebody just stand there and
pick lettuce, as you say?
It's like an ATM machine.
It depends on who the queen is. Like, if they're an absolute drag legend, yeah, go ahead, pick that lettuce. But if you've been doing drag for 2 weeks and don't know how to perform...
Who gets you excited to watch pull money out of an ATM machine? Nobody.
Yeah.
Let me just say this. It's like, if you do it creative, one solution that I've come up with, which works for me, is to... find a spot in the middle of a song where you go into the audience and interact with them, whether they give you money or not.
Or when you look at Detox, she does that classic mannequin performance, and then she pulls out her purse and basically, you know, she's not making eye contact with every single person that puts money in that purse.
Right.
But you know what? That purse gets fucking filled.
Right.
People dump money into that purse because it's the performance and it's the act. So when you say, like, what's the one hard rule about drag performing, Fausto? We talked about this earlier. The one hard fact.
Don't suck. I don't know. Enjoy it. Perform. Enjoy it. Entertain.
And so
be entertaining.
You know, if that grabbing the dollar from people is part of the entertainment, then it's part of the entertainment.
Yeah.
If that's not part of the entertainment and you're still entertaining, do it. But I could, you know, I can understand why somebody might feel a little hurt if they're not getting
that.
But it's also, you know what? Don't be a little bitch.
I think that the only time that you should have the only situation where you should feel offended if a drag queen didn't give you the time of day is if, like, you meet them and try to and they stiff you. Like, there's no excuse for anybody to meet a fan and just not be polite.
Sure.
During a performance, it's totally different. But if you're like one on one with them, unless that person is like,
I work in customer service. Yeah, yeah. I try to be as warm and friendly with people, and still I get accused of being icy. And let me tell you, some of those people are sensitive who are going on social media saying you should smile more are some of the ice cold, most cutthroat, most backstabbing, fighting, call out culture queens on social media you will ever come across. They're the mean girls, bullying other people not to be mean girls because they got an exclusivity contract on being cunts. Okay, just saying. And so, you know, in defense of beings in control of their being in total control of herself, a bitch with a feminist, we can do it, Fowler.
Yeah.
I think it's okay to be an ice cold queen. I think it's okay as long as your audience is connecting with you and your relationship with your audience is healthy and thriving. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
And can I get an amen up in here?
Amen.
Amen.
Remember, folks, we also rely on the dollar. And if you give us a dollar a tip, we'll smile and make eye contact with you.
I will reach out and touch you.
Yeah, so you can go do so at feastoffun.com/donate. $1 does make a difference. If you have a dollar to give us, give a holler and give us a dollar.
I will send you a picture of my eyes looking at you. That's the best way to support the podcast is to become a Plus member, and you can do that at feastoffun.com/plus. Your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen. We are on our 15th season. Can you believe it?
I can believe it.
You know, we've been doing it, and we've been doing it because of people like you. So maybe you've been a supporter in the past, and you've let your subscription lapse, or you've been listening for 15 seasons. You're like, I gave them money 10 years ago. Now's the time to come forward and make yourself be known and reach out and touch someone.
Feed a starving drag queen.
Yeah, you know. Also visit our store at feastoffun.com/store. Get yourself a t-shirt, an apron, a mug, and more.
Sylvia Nix does an amazing video series with James Mansfield. You guys really should check it out. If you haven't seen it already, it's on YouTube. It's free. Go ahead. Watch it.
It doesn't even matter if you don't like wrestling.
I encourage it. It's called binge watching.
Binge away and then purge.
Yeah, that's what RuPaul likes to say. So James Mansfield's YouTube channel is James Mansfield.
James Mansfield.
But it's spelled unusual. J-A-Y-M-E-S.
Yeah, because Jane Mansfield is spelled J-A-Y-N-E.
James.
Yeah.
Like with a Y. With a Y. It sounds very like Wisconsin. I've told this to James before. I was like, I know Jane Mansfield had a Y in her name, and I know that you're pulling that into your own name, but it does sound like, James Mansfield, get back in this trailer right now. I'm so mad at you.
I didn't know that Wisconsin was in the South, but okay.
You know, it's hard to do a trashy voice without Southern.
What you talking about, Derry?
Get back in this trailer right now, James Mansfield. These tacos are not going to eat themselves right now, honey.
These cheese curds.
Cheese curds.
We're from Wisconsin.
These cheese curds. Cheese curds and sausage. Do you eat a lot of that stuff?
Oh, absolutely.
Bratwurst.
I don't eat a lot of bratwurst. I like bratwurst, but I'm a sucker for a good cheese curd. Wisconsin cuisine is so bad for you, but it is so...
I'm a miracle you're alive
right
now.
It builds muscle.
Yeah.
Valentina looked at that and said, I cannot touch that.
Well, girl, look at me. I'm 25 years old and I look 40. It's all the Wisconsin cuisine.
You can change your life around in no time at all.
Folks, we are in dire need of a new computer. Go to GoFundMe.com/FeastOfFunComputer and make a contribution to help our computer. It is in dire need of a new logic board and battery. And so we're basically just trading the old one and trying to get a new one. If you can help us, that would be great. Once again, it's GoFundMe.com/FeastOfFunComputer. Would you like to ring my bell? Ooh. Sylvia next.
Ooh, a queen of the ring getting to ring a bell.
Well, all right.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.